Morning, you guys. I am extremely thankful, first of all, for my Lord Jesus Christ and for God and for all that he's worked within us to be able to have what we have so freely, so graciously. And I pray, Father, I do pray for our hearts and for what you're working, for your love, for your kindness, for your incredible mercy in our lives. I pray for these words this morning that we will read and think about and consider, and what they will do within our hearts, Father, that they can break that rock in pieces and they can pierce our hearts, Father, and just explode into change. Thank you for the powerfulness of your word. In Christ I pray, amen. Where's Katie? Thank you, Katie, for trusting me to come up here and teach this, and for Tom for his overseeing of this whole, actually the whole church, and for the care that he has on his shoulders that he deals with every day. I'm glad it's not mine. So I have, my part is Ezekiel 8 to 13, but I want to start in Psalm 74. You know, God had a covenant with his people, and he called his people, Israel, to be a holy people. He called them and he set them apart from the nations of the world to be holy. He called them and set them apart to reveal to the nations the true God. That was their calling, to reveal the true God in their lives. In Psalm 78, if I get there. And in verse 5, it says, he decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel, which he commanded our forefathers to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands. You know, that's what God desired. And do we see that happening right now? Quite the opposite, right? So Ezekiel chapter 8, if you would turn there. Last night when David was teaching in Ezekiel 7, the words came up, the end has come, no more. No more can I withhold my wrath. The end is here. It's coming. And I think Claire's word was sobering. You know, this whole section that we're reading is very sobering. And it just is sobering. You want to have fun and laugh, but it's sobering. It's a sobering subject. In chapter 8, we're just going to read chapter 8. In these chapters, God shows Ezekiel the rampant idolatry in Israel and the reason why he's bringing this judgment upon them. So we'll read chapter 8 and then we'll go back. It says, in the sixth year, so this is a year after what David was covering, in the sixth year, in the sixth month, on the fifth day, while I was sitting in my house and the elders of Judah were sitting before me, the hand of the sovereign Lord came upon me there. I looked, and I saw a figure like that of a man. From what appeared to be his waist down, he was like fire. And from there up, his appearance was as bright as glowing metal. He stretched out what looked like a hand and took me by the hair of my head. The Spirit lifted me up between earth and heaven, and in visions of God, he took me to Jerusalem, the entrance of the north gate of the inner court, where the idol that provokes to jealousy stood. And there before me was the glory of God, of the God of Israel, as in the vision I had seen in the plain. Then he said to me, son of man, look toward the north. So I looked, and in the entrance north of the gate of the altar, I saw this idol of jealousy. And he said to me, son of man, do you see what they are doing? The utterly detestable things the house of Israel is doing here, things that will drive me far from my sanctuary here in God's temple. But you will see things that are even more detestable. Then he brought me to the entrance of the court. I looked, and I saw a hole in the wall. And he said to me, Son of man, now dig into the wall. So I dug into the wall, and I saw a doorway there. And he said to me, Go in and see the wicked and detestable things that they are doing here. So I went in and looked, and I saw portrayed all over the walls all kinds of crawling things and detestable animals and all the idols of the house of Israel. In front of them stood 70 elders of the house of Israel, and Jaazaniah, son of Shaphan, was standing among them. Each had a censer in his hand, and a fragrant cloud of incense was rising. He said to me, Son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel are doing in the darkness? Each at the shrine of his own idol? They say, The Lord does not see us. The Lord has forsaken the land. Again, he said, You will see them doing things that are even more detestable. Then he brought me to the entrance of the north gate of the house of the Lord, and I saw women sitting there mourning for Tammuz. That's a Babylonian god of fertility. Not God, not the real true God. He said to me, Do you see this, son of man? You will see things that are even more detestable than this. And then he brought me into the inner court of the house of the Lord, and there at the entrance to the temple between the portico and the altar were about 25 men with their backs, with their backs toward the temple of the Lord and their faces toward the east. They were bowing down to the sun in the east. He said to me, Have you seen this, son of man? Is it a trivial matter for the house of Judah to do the detestable things that they are doing here? You know, I think we covered the hills and all the hills and where they built their little altars and shrines on the hills. This is here. This is in the temple of the Lord. Have you seen what they are doing here? Must they also fill the land with violence and continually provoke me to anger? Look at them putting the branch to their nose. That's kind of like I think it was like when the Persians worshiped the sun god, they took these twigs and waved them in front of their nose. God knows why I don't, but it really doesn't matter. It's just kind of a weird thing to not say something about this. Look at them putting the branch to their nose. Therefore, I will deal with them in anger. I will not look on them with pity or spare them, although they shout in my ears, I will not listen to them. You know, this is rampant idolatry. You know, God goes very explicit, telling them what explicitly they were doing, Israel was doing. He's showing Ezekiel all this and the reason for his wrath to come. So we see, what do we see? We see the huge idol at the entrance to the temple. So if you're an Israelite, you get to go to the temple and guess what you see right in front of you? That's what greets you, this idol, this large idol that makes God very jealous. And then the next thing we see is these 70 elders, the leaders of Jerusalem, and they are in their secret little rooms, secretly worshiping their idols, their gods, and they say, God doesn't see me. Well, how about if we turn to Jeremiah? I think we've read this last night. Jeremiah 23. I was thinking of Hebrews 4, too. What does that say? Nothing's hidden in the sight of God. You know, everything is naked and open before him. And then somebody read this Jeremiah one, too. And it's Jeremiah 23. And verse 24. Whoops. Can anyone hide in secret places so that I cannot see him? Can they? Can you hide from God? Can I hide from God? We can pretend, you know, but we can't. Nobody can. They thought they could. Do I not fill heaven and earth? Yeah, declares the Lord. That's God. And these people were deceived. They thought that they could hide from God. They could do whatever they want. And then I was thinking on, let me see, where did it say that? Oh, yeah. When he went in, he dug through the wall and all the crawling things and all the detestable animals. And what doesn't he say? He doesn't say, and all the idols of the other nations. He says, and all the idols of the house of Israel. You know, Israel that was set apart to show the real true God to the nations, now they've claimed all those gods as their own. You know, and I remember when a long time ago in one of the camps we did, and I think it was Katie was teaching on God as light. God can't dwell where there's darkness. And if you think about all the things that we've been reading, there is so much wickedness and so much evil and so much unrepentance. You know, no turning to God, no consideration of who God is and what he really, his dominance, his superiority, his, they don't acknowledge God at all anymore. You know, they've gotten so calloused that it says that God's going to be pushed out. You know, he's going to leave. And that's pretty sad state of affairs. Then let's see what happens after this. Oh, I was thinking, you know, their perception of God's very, very, very small. You know, they don't understand at all who God is. You can turn to Deuteronomy, if you would, chapter 4. And remember the covenant that God made with Israel when they were coming out of Egypt at Mount Sinai? Where did I say to go? Thank you. Get so nervous sometimes. I don't even remember how to turn where the Bible was. Things in the Bible are. Deuteronomy chapter 4. He made a covenant with them, you know, and he gave them commandments. And hold your finger in Deuteronomy 4 and go to Exodus 20. Okay, Exodus 20. Part of the covenant that God made with Israel, he gave them commandments. And I just wanted to go over a few of them before we really get into more of Ezekiel. And in chapter 1, it says, "And God spake all these words, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have how many?" No other gods before me. How many did they have? They had all the gods of all the nations. That's what they were claiming as their own. This is what God asked them to do. Verse 4. "You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." Verse 7, "You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name." And that is like, that's the same thing as it says, and you know, oh, well, by the way, I'm using 1994, my Bible's in 1994, so if yours reads a little bit different, that's why. But it also says, "You shall not take my name in vain," you know, not with emptiness, not without power. Don't call my name and say that you're saying something that's empty, that's not mine. It's really like the word falsely. You shall not use my word falsely. So we've seen the large idol at the entrance. We've seen the 70 elders worshiping all their gods in secret. And now we see the women mourning for Tammuz. And from here, God takes Ezekiel to the court. And in front of the altar, with their backs to the temple, there are about 25 men that are facing east and bowing to the sun. Didn't we just read what they weren't supposed to do? They weren't supposed to bow down before these other gods. And as we've heard previously, the Israelites had become so calloused and so deceived, they didn't even recognize their sin. And God is showing Ezekiel the immense amount that's going on here. You know, is there a chink for any righteousness and holiness in there? It's huge. It's rampant. They're all doing it. I was thinking about how, you know, idolatry and these other gods, it's not different today. Sometimes it may seem a little bit different, but what they were doing was God had told them to keep separate from the other nations, right? Don't look at their gods and say, huh, I wonder what that god's all about. I wonder what they do and how they worship that one. They did. They started taking on other gods. So like what this other nation did, they thought, well, that's kind of normal. They started doing it and it became normal. It's accepted, you know, and in this life that we live now, in this time that we live, no different. You know, we are wholly separated by God to show God to the world. But we have all these nations all around us, and they try to show us what is normal and accepted. And if we're not careful, we do think it's normal and accepted, and I don't want to offend anybody. That's the part of the temptation. You know, you want to not offend people, or you want people to not be hurt. Right? That's what was happening here. Well, does God think it's normal? Does he think it's acceptable? How about Ezekiel chapter 5? We'll just skip back a little bit for a minute and just read something that was read, that David read yesterday. And what do you call that? Ezekiel. Ezekiel 5. It says, this is what the sovereign Lord says. This is Jerusalem, which I have set in the center of the nations, with countries all around her. Yet in her wickedness, she has rebelled against my laws and decrees more than the nations and countries around her. She has rejected my laws and have not followed my decrees. Quite a statement, isn't it? So we're going to move on to chapter 9. And I'm going to read through this one too. Some of you guys haven't read this, I know. So we're just going to read. So it speaks for itself. Then we'll go back and look at a few things. Chapter 9, it says, then I heard him, this is God speaking, then I heard him call out in a loud voice, bring the guards. Oh, you know what this chapter is called? The Lord that strikes. That's what this chapter is. Then I heard him call out in a loud voice, bring the guards of the city here, each with a weapon in his hand. And I saw six men coming from the direction of the upper gate, which faces north, each with a deadly weapon in his hand. With them was a man clothed in linen who had a writing kit at his side. You know, a writing kit. We don't really use writing kits. We have pens that, you know, they had to have writing kits with little probably ink and styluses and whatever they use for paper. But this guy with the writing kit, they came in and stood beside the bronze altar. Now the glory of the God of Israel went up from above the cherubim where it had been and moved to the threshold of the temple. Let's go into the door. This is preparation for leaving. That's sad. Then the Lord called to the man clothed in linen who had the writing kit at his side and said to him, go throughout the city of Jerusalem and put a mark on the foreheads of those who grieve and lament over all the detestable things that are done in it. As I listened, he said to the others, follow him through the city and kill without showing pity or compassion. Slaughter old men, young men, maidens, women, and children. Do not touch anyone who has the mark. But do not touch anybody who has the mark. Begin at my sanctuary. So they began with the elders who were in front of the temple. Then he said to them, defile the temple and fill the courts with the slain. Go. So they went out and began killing throughout the city. While they were killing and I was left alone, I fell face down crying out, oh, sovereign Lord, are you going to destroy the entire remnant of Israel in this outpouring of your wrath on Jerusalem? He answered me. He answered me, the sin of the house of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great, and the land is full of bloodshed, and the city is full of injustice. They say the Lord has forsaken the land. The Lord does not see. So I will not look on them with pity or spare them, but I will bring down on their own heads what they have done. Then the man in the linen with the writing kit at his side brought back word saying, I have done as you commanded. At the beginning, when God calls the guards of the city, I think, excuse me, the other version of it says, bring those who are appointed to execute judgment on the city. And my word was guard, so it kind of reminded me of of God. He took care of his people. He took care of his city. He used to guard Jerusalem and the people of Jerusalem because they allowed him. Now, they don't want anything of his. They don't want his grace. They don't want his mercy. They don't want his word. They want to go their own way. So these guards that were guarding them are now against them. And the Lord that strike, as he's showing, this is what's going to happen when it happens. And then the other part that was really, really sad was when he starts striking, he says, begin at my sanctuary. You know, begin at my sanctuary. And God was the one that originally designed this whole thing. You know, maybe it wasn't in this temple because it was in the wilderness, in the tabernacle, in a tent. But he designed all of this. He designed every single instrument they used, every single plate, every single bowl. He decided what was silver, bronze, you know, gold. He decided if it were the colors of the fabric. He decided everything about this, and he had a reason for doing it. And it was, and he said he dwelt there. Did he really dwell there? God cannot dwell in a temple made with hands, right? Heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool. Who was he doing it for? He was doing it for Israel. You know, this is a place where I am going to meet with my people and I am going to tell them what they need and what I'm going to do for them and how I have done it. And they can pray, they can worship here, they can come to me and I will meet all their needs. Now he says, begin at my sanctuary, defile my temple and kill. Put all the dead people, you know, let it defile the whole place. Do you think God likes that? I don't either. It's not a light thing at all for him. But as it said in chapter 5, the end has come. You know, acknowledge your sin. If you don't, and you won't, this is how I'm going to show you, and maybe you'll see, maybe. Then you'll know that I am the Lord. Ezekiel 10, we're not going to read. I'm just going to tell you because everybody runs out of time up here. So... So I cut a ton of it. This is part of, in this chapter, it's a good chapter if you want to read it, though. It's all good. It's God's word. In this chapter, the man with the linen cloth was told to go to in among the cherubim. And you remember that they're real bright and they had a bunch of, oh, we didn't read that, but they are. They're real bright and had a bunch of fire and everything. And he was told to reach in and take coals and take them and go out and scatter them over the city of Jerusalem. And this prophesied the burning of the city of Jerusalem. And so that was chapter 10. Chapter 11. chapter 11, we're going to read first few verses, number of verses. It says, then the Spirit lifted me up and brought me to the gate of the house of the Lord, which faces east. There at the entrance to the gate were 25 men, and I saw among them Jaazaniah, son of Azur, and Pelatiah, the son of Benaiah, leaders of the people. The Lord said to me, son of man, these are the men who are plotting evil and giving wicked advice in this city. They say, will it not soon be time to build houses? This city is a cooking pot, and we are the meat. Therefore, prophesy against them. Prophesy, son of man. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this cooking pot and the meat thing. because I think it's probably going to come up a little bit later. And the analogy is pretty awesome. They say this cooking pot is Jerusalem, and we live in Jerusalem, God's city. We're okay, you know. And the meat in the pot is them, of course, you know, and they're the choice meat. The exiles, not good. Us, meat in the pot, we're the good ones. See, we're in God's holy city. And these were men that were plotting evil and speaking lies, right? So they were like smugly secure, so sure that there wasn't anything that's going to come against them, you know, so sure that they were the right ones. So let's see what God says in verse 8. You fear the sword, and the sword is what I will bring against you, declares the sovereign Lord. I will drive you out of the city and hand you over to foreigners and inflict punishment on you. You will fall by the sword, and I will execute judgment on you at the borders of Israel. Then you will know that I am the Lord. This city will not be a pot for you, nor will you be the meat in it. I will execute judgment on you at the borders of Israel, and you will know that I am the Lord, for you have not followed my decrees or kept my laws, but have conformed to the standards of the nations around you. Kind of worse, actually, I think. And then in verse, well, we got to read because, you know, they were saying that the exiles were the bad ones, were the good ones. In verse 16, this is what God says about the exiles. Therefore say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Although I sent them far away among the nations and scattered them among the countries, yet for a little while I've been a sanctuary for them in the countries where they have gone. Therefore say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I will gather you from the nations and bring you back from the countries where you have been scattered, and I will give you back the land of Israel again. They will return to it and remove all its vile images and detestable idols. I will give them an undivided heart and put a new spirit in them. I will remove from them their heart of stone and give them a heart of flesh. Then they will follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. They will be my people and I will be their God. Isn't that what he wanted? That's what God wanted all along, for them to be his people and him to be their God. But as for those whose hearts are devoted in their vile images and detestable idols, I will bring down on their own head what they have done, declares the sovereign Lord. And then the cherubim with the wheels beside them spread their wings, and the glory of God of Israel was above them. The glory of the Lord went up from within the city and stopped above the mountains east of it. The Spirit lifted me up, so God left, right? He left the city, left the temple, left the city, gone. Can't stay here anymore. The Spirit lifted me up and brought me to the exiles in Babylonia in the vision given by the Spirit of God. Then the vision I had seen went up from upon me and from up from me, and I told the exiles everything the Lord showed me. What's the next verse? The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, you're living among a rebellious people. They have eyes to see, but do not see, ears to hear, and do not hear, for they are rebellious people. So God had shown Ezekiel all these things of why he was going to do what he was going to do, what he was going to do, and then he tells all the exiles. And the exiles, right? I don't see anything. They have hardened themselves so badly that nope, not going to accept it, sorry. So chapter 12, what had the exiles been told? They were told the vision that Ezekiel had. They also had the letter that Jeremiah sent. Remember that one? And he said, settle in, build houses, plant gardens, marry and have children, increase in number. 70 years, and I will bring you back. That means probably a lot of them, you know. And did they want to think that? They would rather believe, remember, was it Hananiah, the one that said, 2 years I'm going to bring you, he'll bring you back and Babylon will be destroyed. That's what they wanted to believe. So they wanted so much to believe that because it sounded so much better, so much nicer, that they rejected the words of Ezekiel and Jeremiah. And they hardened their heart to what was really true. They would rather believe lies and the false dreams that these false prophets were telling them. The false prophets were telling them, well, we already said that they'll be back in 2 years, like that people in exile, they'll be back 2 years. You only have to do this for 2 more years. You'll go back. And Babylonia will be destroyed. Well, is that going to happen? So in chapter 12, the rest of chapter 12, I don't really want to read either, just for sake of time. But in this, because they were so hardened and their ears were so stopped and their eyes didn't see, that God has Ezekiel act out a couple things, one of which is exile. It's about the people in Jerusalem. They're going to go into exile. And the way he does it, we're not going to go there. So he does. He acts the whole thing out because their eyes and their ears, they just didn't see anything. And then he also, I think I do want to read one thing, though, out of there. Where was that? In chapter 12, verse 10, I'm sorry, verse 8. This is after he had shown about the exile. It was against the Israelites in Jerusalem and against Zedekiah. Verse 8, it says, in the morning the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, did not that rebellious house of Israel ask you, what are you doing? Say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. This oracle concerns the prince in Jerusalem and the whole house of Israel who are there. Say to them, I am assigned to you. As I have done, so it will be done to them. They will go into exile as captives. The prince among them will put his things on his shoulder at dusk and leave, and a hole will be dug in the wall for him to go through. He will cover his face so that he cannot see the land. I will spread my net for him, and he will be caught in my snare. I will bring him to Babylonia, the land of the Chaldeans, but he will not see it, and there he will die. I will scatter to the winds all those around him, his staff and all his troops. I will pursue them with a drawn sword. They will know that I am the Lord when I disperse them among the nations and scatter them through the countries. But I will spare a few of them from the sword, famine, and plagues, that in the nations where they go, they may acknowledge all their detestable practices. Then they will know I am the Lord. You know how many times it says, then they will know I am the Lord? I forget, but it's a lot. In chapter 13, and to this chapter I say, listen, 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 listen up, because this is all about words. This is going to involve the false prophets, the lies that they're going to tell, the words that they have a choice to believe. And I think in the first teaching, when Tom was teaching this week, was about all the reproof and warning in the New Testament, in the church epistles, and the reason that God does that is because he knows us, you know, and he knows what we're surrounded with, you know, no different. We're surrounded with evil and wickedness and things that people want us to consider normal and acceptable. But these words, we need to discern these words. The words that we hear on a daily basis, do they originate from God? You know, if they don't originate from God, then we don't keep them, do we? We reject them. We do what Jesus did. It is written. This is really what's true. If they are from God, do we hear them? Do we accept them? Do we allow them to change us? You know, do we, or Do we allow changes? Let's read chapter 13, the first part of it. It says, "The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, prophesy." Wait a minute. "Prophesy against the prophets of Israel who are now prophesying. Say to them who prophesy out of their own imagination, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the foolish prophets who follow their own spirit and have seen nothing. Your prophets, O Israel, are like jackals among ruins." Isn't that descriptive? Jackals. You know, it's already ruins, but now these jackals are going through it even more, destroying it even more. Very descriptive. This is what he says about these prophets. That's what they're like. "Your prophets, O Israel, are like jackals among ruins. You have not gone up to the breaks in the wall to repair it for the house of Israel, so that it will stand firm in the battle on the day of the Lord. Their visions are false." Remember when it said that you don't take the Lord, your God, Lord's name in vain? You don't use it falsely. You don't say, this is what God says, and it's not. That's what this is. "Their visions are false and their divinations a lie." Verse 6. "They say, the Lord declares, when the Lord has not sent them. Yet they expect their words to be fulfilled. Have you not seen false visions and uttered lying divinations when you say, the Lord declares, though I have not spoken?" That's what these prophets are doing. They're telling lies. I think it's five times when it talks about not using the Lord's name in vain. The word in vain means empty, useless, worthless. It's used five times in this section of what they were doing. It's usually it's translated false visions or false words. Direct disobedience of a command of God. And these people, they wanted to believe him because they were more comfortable with him. They wanted to believe him because they wanted everything to be okay. And in verse 8, "Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Because of your false words and lying visions, I am against you, declares the sovereign Lord." Sovereign Lord, sovereign Lord, sovereign Lord. "My hand will be against the prophets who see false visions and utter lying divinations. They will not belong to the council of my people or be listed in the records of the house of Israel, nor will they enter the land of Israel." What are they talking about? When his people are restored to Israel, they're not going to be in the records. So you will know that I am the sovereign Lord. "Because they lead my people astray, saying peace when there is no peace. Because when a flimsy wall is built, they cover it with whitewash. Therefore, tell those who cover it with whitewash that it is going to fall. Rain will come in torrents, and I will send hailstones hurtling down, and the violent winds will burst forth. When the wall collapses, will people not ask you, where's the whitewash with you covered it?" That's like this white plaster that you put on the wall. It looks like it has appearance that looks real nice, but no support whatsoever. You know, and that's what these guys are doing. They are lying to God's people, they are deceiving them, and the people want to hear them. And we're going to end in verse 22. There's a lot more, but it's kind of been said over and over and over and over again, hadn't it? but he's talking about the false prophets and the women who use magic charms. Says verse 22, "Because you disheartened the righteous with your lies, when I had brought them no grief, and because you encouraged the wicked not to turn from their evil ways and so save their lives, therefore you will no longer see false visions or practice divination. I will save my people from your hands, and then you will know that I am the Lord." You know, and that's the point. You will know that I am the Lord. And that's God's desire all along, to be a God to his people, to be able to care for them, take care of them, provide everything they need. But their idolatry was so strong that they rejected it all. And in this next section, Nathan's up next, and he'll get into some more of this fun stuff. And actually, we'll see how much God loves his people. So thank you.